In this episode of Skeptico, radio journalist and writer Steve Paulson on how the media covers the intersection of science and religion.
Going back to what I was saying about the New York Times, I think part of the problem is there's this assumption that if you're going to deal with science and religion, you go through science to resolve that issue. And I think you have to do that to some degree, but you have to also come at it from the religious angle, and you have to talk about the nature of spiritual experience.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, their critics, and sometimes, as is the case today, with important media figures. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris, and we're joined today by Steve Paulson, executive producer and frequent interviewer on the Peabody Award-winning public radio show that I think most of you have probably heard out there. It's called To the Best of Our Knowledge. On that show, he delves into a wide range of topics for folks with curious minds, ranging from a whole variety of things. But he's also a regular contributor to Salon.com, where he explores recently, in a five-part series, the intersection of science and religion. Steve Paulson, welcome to Skeptico.
Hi, Alex.
Well, I'm really glad you're able to join us today. Could you maybe pick up where I started there with that introduction? Tell us a little bit about To the Best of Our Knowledge and maybe your most recent series, Electrons to Enlightenment.
Well, sure. To the Best of Our Knowledge is a nationally syndicated radio show distributed by Public Radio International, produced at Wisconsin Public Radio, and it's basically a program about ideas, exploring ideas in a certain amount of depth. It's very eclectic, ranges across all kinds of different issues, and in particular, my focus, say for the last year or so, has been exploring the intersection between science and religion. And as you mentioned, we put together a five-hour series. And it wasn't just me, it was the whole staff who did this, this series, Electrons to Enlightenment. And throughout those 5 hours, we touched on some of the big issues in this whole science and religion debate. So for instance, 1 hour was dealing with consciousness, another dealt with the origins of the universe, the structure of the physical laws of the universe, and we talked about evolution, and we had 1 hour on awe and wonder, and sort of the underlying question there was, is the non-theist's experience of awe and wonder similar to what a religious person might experience?
Well, I thought the whole series was excellent, and it touches on so many of the topics that seem to come up on our little podcast here that I just couldn't resist chatting with you. And as I explained in my email, I always felt a little bit like there was more that you wanted to say there, but of course you're behind the mic, and that's what I was hoping we could delve into. Could you start by maybe telling us a little bit about your interest in these areas and kind of where that began and what that's all about?
Sure. Well, I've touched on these subjects over the years. I've been working on this radio show for a number of years, but it really kind of exploded when I was picked to be one of the Templeton Cambridge Journalism Fellows in Science and Religion. So there were 12 journalists from Europe and from the United States who went over to Cambridge University in England for a few weeks last summer, and we heard lectures. Essentially, we attended seminars with various noted scientists and philosophers and theologians, and we really kind of explored this whole subject of science and religion. And then I have been reading lots and lots of books and articles about this subject and doing lots of interviews, and it's just, I find it endlessly fascinating. I mean, one question leads to another, which leads to another, and I don't claim to have come up with any particular answers to a lot of these questions, but I think I'm a little clearer in how I think about a lot of these issues. So it's been thrilling, intellectually thrilling, I would say, to investigate all of these questions.
Well, it certainly was thrilling to listen to it, and of course, in our show notes, we'll have links to both the Salon articles and the broadcast on To the Best of Our Knowledge. You know, what I thought was interesting is just the way you framed the five parts. And I thought maybe we could delve into that just a little bit and tell me some of your, I don't know, biggest takeaways in, let's say, in consciousness research and in looking into what that's all about. And I think it's, you know, I remember back to the to an interview you did, I think you did a while ago with E.O. Wilson, and I think that pretty clearly kind of set the science versus religion debate when he says, you know, really you have to either choose between scientific materialism view that the origin of the mind is just purely scientific, purely biology, chemistry, or traditional religious views. And as you explore that, how do you see the framing of the issue of consciousness?
I think it's one of the huge issues in the whole science and religion debate. It may be the most important issue. It's sort of, and it tends not to be focused on because there's so much attention to the evolution creationism debate, and that's where the media attention tends to go. But
right.
I would say if you really want the cutting edge of the science and religion debate, it's consciousness probably. And there's some other areas as well. But, well, I mean, there's a big, huge, in my mind, unanswered question, which is, is the mind just the brain? I mean, can you explain the what happens in our mind, all of our subjective experiences, can you reduce that to the neural circuitry and the electrochemical surges in the brain? And that's where a lot of the debate comes up. And in my view, it's very much unresolved still. And who knows? Maybe someday scientists will be able to figure all of this out. Certainly, many of them think they will, or philosophers. Daniel Dennett is a prominent example of this. The atheist philosopher who's a hardened materialist. I think his comment on this about the consciousness is there are lots of puzzles, but no mysteries. I love that comment. But on the other hand, Richard Dawkins, probably the most famous atheist out there, he would describe consciousness as the biggest puzzle in all of science. In all of biology and neurobiology. And he, I think, thinks it's very much up in the air whether we will resolve those questions. So anyway, that's kind of the larger framework. And I think a lot follows on how we think about consciousness, because if you think about it, most religious traditions assume that the mind is more than the brain. I mean, you know, think about some core religious ideas, life after death, the idea that perhaps we could communicate with some higher being. I think all of those presume that the mind is broader than just sort of the casings within our skulls. So that those are fascinating questions.
Right, right. And, you know, I think one of the points that you mentioned early on that I think is really interesting is that the conclusion that you come to is really the most profound conclusion that I come to is that the issue is unsettled. And I think as to whether mind equals brain. And that's something that I guess I do have a problem with. And I thought you drew this out very well without making it confrontational or anything. But E.O. Wilson, who is just fantastic and needs to be highly, highly esteemed by all of us, you know, really doesn't leave any room for the scientific investigation to a theory other than materialism. And then
right.
I thought you followed this up with a very interesting discussion with B. Alan Wallace, who is a Buddhist scholar, and just kind of very, I think, adeptly kind of pointed out that that's somewhat of a false dichotomy and said, you know, I'm from the Buddhist tradition and we're not theistic at all, but we have kind of a different way of looking at these issues. And we say we can investigate whether or not there is this separate consciousness from the mind. And I just wonder what's your take on kind of the scientism that kind of seems to want to shut down even the thought that, hey, here's a real issue that needs to be resolved in a scientific way.
I get kind of tired of, I think your word scientism is a good word to describe that. I mean, my spirit of inquiry into all of these things is that we don't really know the answers, and so let's look at them. Let's investigate them. And when you come in with the assumption that, well, of course, the mind is nothing more than the brain, to me that just shuts down the discussion. And so I am naturally drawn to those people who are willing to look at all these different possibilities. And you know, one thing I should say is that the lines, I mean, they kind of fall where you would expect in terms of the materialists on the one side. The materialists tend to be the atheists, and the religious people on the other side who tend to embrace a non-materialist view of reality. But they don't always fall that way. And an excellent example, to me, one of the most fascinating examples is Sam Harris, the famous atheist, probably the most famous atheist in America, who wrote a couple of bestsellers. And, you know, he hates religion, especially the monotheistic traditions. But if you read his last chapter in The End of Faith, it's basically embracing spiritual traditions, particularly from Asian religions. And when I interviewed him, I was blown away, actually, by some of the things that he said. I mean, he said that it's not at all clear that science will ever understand consciousness. And he said consciousness may go down to the bedrock of electrons. And he was not willing to discount, for instance, the possibility of life after death. He talked about how he has had certain, I suppose you could call them telepathic experiences. You know, the phone rings, and he just knows that it's a certain person is calling, even though he hasn't talked to that person in months. I mean, this is Sam Harris, the famous atheist.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was kind of astounded, and I thought, I mean, that was. And the other thing that's worth pointing out is that Sam Harris is getting a PhD in neuroscience. I mean, this is no dummy when it comes to the science of the brain. So, I mean, to me, he has a real spirit of open inquiry, even though, you know, a lot of people would say he doesn't when it comes to other matters of religion, but certainly on the consciousness question, it's fascinating stuff.
You know, it is to me too, and it's so refreshing. I mean, I think he really needs to be drawn out in the way that you did and explain his views, because he speaks so clearly and forcefully in a very convincing fashion about the problems with religion and saying, you know, we really need to kind of take a stand and say you can't be in the middle and say, well, you know, maybe it's okay. If it's not based on truth, then we really need to put it in the same vein as we would other folks who are speaking non-truth and trying to wrap it around science and all the rest of that. And then, as you point out on the other side, I think he leaves the door open. It, you know, it's really, again, kind of funny the way that these lines get drawn. You talk about that with Sam Harris, and I've had the opportunity on Skeptico to talk to a lot of very well-qualified and highly regarded parapsychologists, people who are real scientists and are doing this kind of inquiry. And again, there would, I think, be an assumption that these folks are at least spiritual, or if not outright religious, and many of them aren't. Many of them are atheistic, you know, and yet they're coming under fire from a certain camp in the materialistic vein who says, no, you know, it's so funny how the fundamentalism, both on the religious front and the scientific front, seem to kind of really meet in so many kind of disturbing ways.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, I mean, another person who I'll mention who I think is doing some really fascinating research on this whole question of consciousness is Andrew Newberg, a neuroscientist at the University of Pennsylvania, who is doing some groundbreaking studies using brain imaging technology of, he studied Buddhist monks who meditate and Franciscan nuns who pray and Pentecostals who come in and chant, and, you know, hooks them up to his brain imaging machines and sees what happens when they go into their religious or meditative states. And, I mean, one of the things that's interesting about this is that, for instance, when you compare the Buddhists and the Franciscan nuns, now these are very experienced either meditators or people who've prayed, they're used to, they're practiced into going into a deeper state, an altered state of consciousness, and, you know, touching some deeper part of themselves. They have very similar cognitive experiences. I mean, from the perspective of the brain imaging, I mean, you know, what people talk about is those mystical states, that sense of oneness with the universe. I mean, really, what happens there is a certain part of your brain, the sort of the controlling part that gives you your sense of self, that shuts off, so that then you have this larger experience, this feeling of connectedness. And, you know, the one difference, the major difference between the Franciscan nuns and the Buddhist monks is the monks, when they meditate, they activate the visual part of their brain, whereas the nuns activate the language part, which makes sense, I mean, given their particular traditions that they're using. But, you know, think about this. You know, in Buddhism, it's not a theistic religion. I mean, there's no God there. The nuns are praying to God, and yet what's happening in their brains is very similar. And so, I mean, that raises questions about, so what do we mean by religious experience? And I think part of the problem that we have when we talk about this is we get bogged down in the language.
Right.
And that sometimes you need to talk about the actual experience rather than language. And I think one of the problems in this whole science and religion debate is we can really get, I mean, words like God and religion have to be defined as well as the word transcendence, because
yeah.
they mean different things to different people. And a lot of the arguments, I think, happen because people have different definitions of what those mean.
Right. And I absolutely. And I think it also goes back to your earlier point about when you really delve into it, you keep bumping up against this idea of consciousness and this
right.
idea of dualism or non-dualism. I mean, because, of course, one view out there that is sometimes presented in a very scientific way, and there's no reason why it can't be a reasonable, testable theory, and that's that this brain, this hunk of meat up there in your head, is really kind of like a TV tuner, and you can kind of tune it a bunch of different ways, and you can make it look at different things, but that there's this field of consciousness that's interconnected awareness that we're kind of tapping into. And that's not to say that that's the way that it is. It's just to say, when you start kind of framing things from the outset in a different way, you would just kind of look at all these things differently. And there's just so many questions that are mm-hmm. that are unanswered and are that are possibilities and are,
yeah.
are real scientific
yeah.
possibilities the further we delve into it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I will say, to introduce a note of skepticism here, that quantum physics gets thrown around a lot as trying to explain some of these things,
right.
that, especially when it comes to paranormal experiences. And I'm the first to say that I really don't understand quantum physics, but I have a kind of a layman's understanding of it. And probably a lot of what we hear about quantum physics, you know, the whole business of non-locality, and it's used to explain experiences like telepathy, and who knows? Maybe there's something there, but maybe there's not, and that is far from proven. And I think that where you run into danger with someone like Deepak Chopra, he just fights quantum physics, and he says, well, you know, this is proven, and then, you know, he goes on from there, as opposed to leaving it as a still very speculative theory. And I think you have to be cautious about that. I mean, for instance, when you talk to some of the scientists who actually study quantum physics, I mean, they'll say that, yes, I mean, there is this quantum entanglement that, you know, electrons that were once connected, you know, will always stay connected no matter how far apart they are, but you can't actually send signals. I mean, this is not a sort of a process of sending information, so who knows?
I agree, and you're absolutely right, and we've actually had a couple of pretty good physicists on and have tackled that directly, because I think that is a misuse of kind of science to take this idea of quantum mechanics, which is really bizarre in many ways, but it can't be extrapolated into every new age field that you'll like. Just because there's mystery here, then that applies to mystery there. And there's also, when you talk to the physicists, I get even more confused, because then they say, well, you know, there's also the uncertainty principle could also account for this and this, and they go into four other areas that I'm
right.
completely in the dark on. But I think your point
yeah.
is well taken.
Yeah. Well, let me mention one other person as well. I don't know if you've ever interviewed Ken Wilber, but he's one of the people I talk to, and he has an interesting take on this, because, of course, he is, and he's kind of the guru of consciousness in some circles, and, you know, is often held up as the great intellectual kind of on the new age end of things. But in a lot of ways, he's not especially new age. I mean, he's a very rigorous thinker. And he, for instance, kind of sneers at those people who are always citing quantum physics to explain consciousness. And he says that if you really look at the writings of some of the great physicists, so people like Einstein and Bohr and, you know, all those pioneering physicists, he says they were mystics, but not for the reasons that you would think. Not because, let's say, quantum physics sort of proves paranormal experience. It's because what they really did was they were saying that science can only explain so much, and that there are some mysteries that cannot be explained. And from his perspective, that's what makes them mystical thinkers.
Yeah, I just don't know exactly where to go with that, because, I mean, that just seems to you know, it's almost like the Stephen Jay Gould, you know, just kind of, well, let's just kind of make this whole thing fuzzy where we can't delve into it. And I kind of like the approach that says, we just have to be more creative and think of more clever experiments that use the scientific method that we know to kind of probe into these issues.
I will say Wilbur, I mean, in his framework there, as far as I could see, there's no mechanism for explaining some of the stuff that goes beyond conventional science. I mean, I agree with you there.
Right. And, you know, that's why, you know, you mentioned Deepak, who I have never spoken to, and I hope someday to get him on the phone. And I understand the criticism that he takes, but also in working with the skeptical community, who's does a good job in their position, I think just sometimes overreaches when you get into science. But if you get into these camps, you know, which you delved into a lot in the science and religion debate, but if you take the religion part out of it and you just say the science of consciousness, there's these same debates. You know, there's a lot of interesting experiments that do go on, and the whole near-death experience is a classic one that really gets fundamentally addresses the issue of survival of consciousness. And I don't know, that leads into kind of another area that I really wanted to get your opinion on. As a journalist and as a prominent an executive producer of a prominent radio show, how do you see how this issue of science and religion, and maybe even deeper than that, the issue of human consciousness and what that, the implications of that, how is that being framed by the media? I hate to say the mainstream media, that's such a tired expression, but what are your thoughts in terms of what you did and what you felt you needed to do differently? What's being done well and what isn't?
I still think consciousness in the way that we're talking about it is pretty much under the radar of the mainstream media. It probably won't remain that way, but it tends not to get discussed within the larger science and religion debate. I would say that let's just take the New York Times as an example, the newspaper of record. That is, it's sort of rigorously an example of scientific materialism. I mean, you read articles over and over, and I mean, if it's in the science section, for instance, any article that kind of touches on religion will probably end up kind of sneering at religion. The one place where that's not likely to happen is, say, in the religion column. And so you have, you know, the science, but most of these stories dealing with science and religion are going to end up in the science section, and they will be approached from sort of the mainstream paradigm within science, which is scientific materialism. Now, in the consciousness per se, I don't think that's going to come up very much. But if it does, certainly there will be critics that will be cited who will criticize the notion that the mind might be different than the brain. So. I think this, it'll be interesting to see how the issue of consciousness plays out in the media in coming years. My guess is it will get a lot more attention than it has so far.
Can you maybe go into that? Why do you think that's so? And in particular, what really grabbed you as you explored these areas with these different thinkers? What grabbed you as something, as a media person, that you think could catch on with the public and maybe captivate people a little bit?
Well, I think there's a huge hunger to understand these issues. I mean, these are some of the most basic experiences that we deal with, some of the most basic ideas. I mean, this whole question of, I mean, these are really the two great paradigms to live by. I mean, the scientific paradigm or the religious paradigm, and I think one of the big questions is, are they really two separate realms, as Stephen Jay Gould once said, or is there a certain degree of overlap there? And I think that's where a lot of this is being played out. And I'd say for me, really, the way I approach this is, I'm a pretty secular person. I mean, I haven't gone to church since I was, I don't know, maybe in eighth grade or so. The basic question for me is, what's a rationally minded, scientifically literate person, someone who is impatient with religious dogma, but still open to spiritual experience, what is that person supposed to make of religion in the 21st mm-hmm. century?
Mm-hmm.
So, because in a lot of ways, science has become the the dominant paradigm. And not in all circles. I mean, you can cite, you know, all the people who take the Bible literally. I mean, certainly there are huge numbers of people there, but I'm talking about the way these things are talking about the mainstream media. I mean, there's no question in my mind, for instance, that, you know, evolution is the, you know, the dominant correct theory about how life evolved. I mean, there are some particular questions about that, but I mean, that's the accepted theory. Mm-hmm. So how are you supposed to make sense of religion in this day and age? And that's sort of the question that I was grappling with. And I mean, we've discovered, for instance, on my radio show, to the best of our knowledge, that whenever we do these programs, for instance, on science and religion, we get an enormous response. We get more response on these issues than anything else we do.
Really?
For instance, when we interviewed E.O. Wilson, we got dozens of listener emails on that. Same when we did another show with Karen Armstrong and Sam Harris in the same program. Dozens of responses, and also Richard Dawkins. And I will say that for whatever reason, when we had Dawkins on, the responses ran heavily in his favor. Most people who wrote in, at least, agreed with him. Take that however you want. And so, I mean, I guess one reason why I find all this interesting, and I think if you talk about science and religion, you can't just approach this from the angle of science. You have to also talk about the religious end of things. Otherwise, it's kind of weighted in one direction. And that's going back to what I was saying about the New York Times. I think part of the problem is there's this assumption that if you're going to deal with science and religion, you go through science to resolve that issue. And I think you have to do that to some degree, but you have to also come at it from the religious angle, and you have to talk about the nature of spiritual experience. And I think one of the questions is, how much can scientists, with their objective instruments of inquiry, really get at the roots of religious experience? I mean, it goes back to sort of the mind-brain conundrum. How much can science sort of pierce through the world of subjectivity? And I think that's very much an open question, and that's why I'm very drawn to someone like Karen Armstrong, the historian of religion, who, I mean, her point is that religion is really not so much about belief. She says, you know, that's the way it's always described. Mm-hmm. That's what the atheists tend to latch onto. You know, it's belief in a supernatural being, and that's irrational, and therefore we should, you know, get rid of it. And she says, no, it's more an experience. She would describe the religious imagination as akin to poetry, to art. Mm-hmm. It's tapping into mystery. It's tapping into sort of a more intuitive experience of the world. And she very self-consciously avoids sort of those ideas of belief, of a supernatural being. She happens to believe that the core religious principle really has nothing to do with a personal God. I mean, she would, you know, a lot of people would disagree with that. So I find her to be kind of a breath of fresh air in this whole discussion.
Absolutely, and that's a great interview that you did. I enjoyed that one as well. You know, I would say that I think part of the problem that you're outlining is one that you worked really hard to overcome, and that's that this science versus religion debate is another somewhat of a false dichotomy, because we really have to push through all this crap in religion that really kind of is off subject. I mean, the whole creation and Bible and the whole orthodoxy of religion, to get to some of the deeper fundamental issues that I agree. I mean, just from our little podcast here, there's a real hunger, there's a real interest on both sides, on people who are scientifically oriented, but say, gosh, you know, is everything that I'm being told really valid from a scientific perspective? Is there this other aspect to it? And from people who you might consider believers who are saying, gee, why can't we establish these truths scientifically? But I think the challenge, and I'd love to get your view on this, is how do you push through as you did, and how does the debate get past this kind of really grossly oversimplified and unproductive science versus religion debate?
Well, your guess is as good as mine, though, on that. I don't know. I mean, I think it's just it comes down to various people putting out their ideas and hopefully generating public discussion about some of these things. I mean, there's obviously been an enormous amount of public interest in the whole science and religion discussion in the last couple of years. I mean, a number of books have come out on this, and whether it's moving the discussion to a new level, I don't know. But for people who are really interested in these questions, there are places to look, and there are lots of books to read, but in terms of changing the overall nature of the public discussion, that's anybody's guess as to whether that will happen. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, and I think you make an excellent point that it's the kind of glass half empty, half full. You're certainly right. I think there are more resources for these alternative views and for this deeper analysis of it than ever before. And I think you've certainly contributed to that. So what can we expect in the future? Now, do you have to kind of leave electrons to enlightenment alone, or will we see more on these issues in the future from you?
You'll see more from me. Well, in fact, what I'm working on right now at this very moment, I'm working at home because I'm putting together a book proposal on this subject. So it's essentially it will be a collection of interviews that I've done, like those that have run in Salon. Basically my approach to this whole subject is that you have to come at the science and religion debate from many different perspectives. There's not one lens through which you can look at it. I mean, you have to talk about consciousness. I think you have to talk. I mean, there are various key questions you have to ask in, for instance, various scientific disciplines. I mean, one question is, how do we explain the origin of the universe? Obviously, huge religious implications for that. Why are the laws of nature, the laws of physics, designed the way they are? I mean, a lot of people talk about how they seem to be so finely tuned so that stars and planets and eventually life could evolve. And, you know, there's another question about evolution. I mean, the real question about evolution in my mind is it's not, you know, how do you reconcile evolution with the reading the Bible? It's, is evolution really just the product of random genetic mutations? You know, are human beings just a total lucky accident? Or are there some underlying principles that led to human beings? And there's a rather vigorous debate among biologists about that. So that's another big question. Another question is, what are the roots of religious belief? And a lot of people have been looking at that. You know, Dan Dennett and Lewis Wolpert and a whole bunch of scientists. And a lot of these people come at that from an atheistic perspective, and they sort of want to demystify the divine. But not everyone does. Mm-hmm. And so that's another question. You know, where did this religious impulse come from? And so my approach to all of these things is it's sort of a grab bag of, you know, you look into different disciplines, and I've just been mentioning the scientific ones, but I think you also have to look at religious disciplines. I mean, I think you have to talk about, I mean, if you're serious about talking, addressing some of the religious issues here, you have to get into questions of how do you read and interpret the sacred texts? What do you make of those stories of miracles in the Bible, for instance? And there are, you know, really interesting people like Elaine Pagels, the Gnostic Gospel scholar, who has a very interesting perspective on that. So I think you have to kind of bring all of these different perspectives together. That's what I'm trying to do in my various ways on my radio show and in the pieces that I do for Salon. And hopefully, sort of, when you look at some of these things, you'll have a better understanding of how to sort out these issues.
Excellent. Well, that certainly sounds exciting, and we'll... in the book proposal phase, so we'll have to sit a while and see how that incubates out. But we'll look for that and more from you, Steve Paulson, in the future. Anything else to add before we wrap things up?
I think we've pretty much covered it.
Okay. Well, thanks again for joining us. It's been very, very interesting. We've touched on so many different subjects that are relevant to the issues that we discuss and our listeners are interested in. Again, we'll have links to all of these great interviews and articles on our show notes. Steve, thanks again for joining us.
Okay, thank you, Alex.
Thanks again to Steve Paulson for joining us today. You'll find more information about his series, From Electrons to Enlightenment, at our website. That's skeptiko.com, where you'll also find links to our other shows, our show notes, information for how to contact us. By the way, I've been talking about our new effort, Open Source Science, which will launch soon. And I want to offer to anyone out there who wanted a special kind of preview of the website and might have some feedback that you think is valuable for us, drop me an email and I'll give you a link to what we're working on. And you can see it a couple weeks before it goes live. Well, I think that's going to about do it for today. Goodbye for now.